Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote coming up at 7:15. Looking forward to that conversation with him. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports from 8 to 8:30, talking all things NFL and his weekly visit as well. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've talked a lot about the quarterbacks this week, the two-quarterback approach. Let's operate under the assumption that Will Levis is starting. I feel like, and obviously we're not going to know because at this point of the year the media is not in there watching practice. I feel like if you're the Titans and he's going to play at all, much less if he's going to start, you need him getting just about every rep he could possibly get in practice. Just number one, let's say everything went swimmingly with him this offseason into training camp. He never got hurt and he was available for all the practices. He played in all the preseason games. Like, I would still, if he was starting for the first time, I'd want him to have all the reps in practice to get ready for this. And then you factor in he played in one preseason game, then he was hurt. He missed a lot of training camp because he was hurt. Like, he needs all the reps he can get. So, going back to like the Vrabel part of this, that's what makes the two quarterback thing a little bit more confusing to me anyway, where like I'm like, if Levis is going to play, then Levis needs to like almost exclusively be getting the reps at practice heading into this week. That's just the way I view it.
Yeah, like, and the idea of like a Willis goal line thing, or sure, here and there special plays, well, then those reps are good for him. But sure, I agree. As many reps as you can possibly have for Will Levis, who, again, has, unlike other rookie quarterbacks who might be QB2 behind a veteran, has another young quarterback already who is ahead of him. So, like, the reps have been extremely limited, even, you know, not, it doesn't even obviously compare to a C.J. Stroud or Anthony Richardson, like a rookie starter.
Yeah.
Even, it's even limited compared to a rookie backup, the typical rookie backup. So if you're going to put him on the football field, I think as many practice reps as possible should be spent on him. So, yeah, I'd love to, you know, have that practice video from yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Connor Stallions, as far as I know, he may have it all, you know. So
somebody go check the apartments across from the pond over there.
That's
the Titans
right.
Facility.
Yeah, that's right. There's one of those, you know, there's a overlooking the Vols practice field too.
Yeah.
John Adams has gone up there and like written a column with the dude who lives in there.
I remember.
You think Connor Stallions doesn't have the money to rent that out for a little bit?
Just beautiful. So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Kuharsky yesterday that is a really difficult one to answer. What are fair expectations for Will Levis on Sunday if he's starting and he's in there against the Falcons, given the basically zero information we have at him at the NFL level?
Well, it's not fair to expect him to be great. I think the fair expectation is certainly that you're careful with the ball. I mean, right? I mean, but that's the thing too. It's like we criticize Malik Willis for waiting, you know, not letting it rip, you know, not throwing someone open, you know, not getting rid of it quickly. And some of that is also, you know, it's hesitation to make a mistake, right? And that happens a lot with young quarterbacks. So it's that balance of you want to see him be aggressive and believe what he sees and let it go, but also not turn it over. I mean, look, the fair expectation is that he looks like an NFL quarterback, like he pre-snap knows what he's doing, that he knows the game plan, runs the plays well, doesn't have a bunch of mistakes, you know, running the wrong play, stuff like that. And then he makes some plays. He's got to start to look like you're not going to find out about him completely, know everything about him. You have to expect him to look like a rookie and have some growing pains and all that, but you want to see some signs that he can be a good quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, like I want to see him let it rip a little bit on Sunday, and there could be some mistakes that come along with that. Like, I don't think the Titans' best formula for a win, even if Ryan Tannehill is starting, is not to sit there and drop back and throw it 30 times. So, you know, if Levis starts Sunday, unless they just get down in a hurry, you're not going to see him throw the ball all that much. Like, they're going to run the ball, I think, pretty heavily on Sunday. But when you do get your opportunities to throw the ball, and when the protection holds up, which is a big F with this offensive line, you know, be decisive with where you're going with the football. You know, and we talked about that with Willis, just holding on to it a little bit too much. Like, I would love Will Levis to be at a place where, you know, he's confident in what he sees with the defense. He's confident on where he wants to go with the football. It's not going to be perfect. There are going to be some mistakes. But I think also if you're the Titans, part of what I'm telling him is don't be, like, scared to death out there to make a mistake, because you're just not going to be effective playing quarterback that way. So let it rip. And if there are some mistakes that come along with that in your first start, then I think you have to live with that if you're the Titans. I'm not saying that he's got to be reckless out there, but, you know, I don't want to see – you know, Will Levis scared to death to make a mistake out there, because I just think the Titans offense is so limited where you got to find a way to let it rip and take some chances out there if you're him on Sunday.
Yeah, and that hasn't been him. You know, he hasn't been scared.
No.
You know, and sometimes that's gotten him into trouble for sure. And then last year, as we've talked about ad nauseum, he had some tough conditions around him. And look, at times he still played well. He obviously didn't play well in the game in Knoxville, which a lot of people who are Titans fans remember that and still think it's a slap in the face.
Yes.
They drafted him over Hendon Hooker. But, yeah, he's got to let it rip. I think he will. I mean, you don't want to see a three-pick game, you know, because, like you said, the formula for winning this game is running the ball and playing defense, and it's, you know, even if Tannehill were the quarterback, it's probably – like a lot of Falcons games, yeah, 17-13, yep. 17-16, maybe 20-17, maybe.
Yep. I mean, that's what you're looking at. I mean, it's not going to be much more than that. I guess the one part of the protection from the line that I feel good about is, and Kuharsky brought this up yesterday, it's not like they're just dynamic pass rushers left and right that the Falcons bring to the table. You know, could you have a little bit more success protecting your quarterback this week when you're not playing, you know, a TJ Watt type or somebody like that out there, which, by the way, is coming next Thursday, so we'll see how that goes.
Coming right up.
But, I don't know. Like, I don't have a ton of confidence in this Titans offensive line in pass protection against anybody, but I guess it is good that there's no, like, dominant pass rusher on the other side of things for the Falcons this week.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it's better. The Titans are definitely better off in a given week when they're not facing a dominant edge rusher.
Although.
Or multiple dominant
edge rushers. Bud Dupree, revenge tour game?
Well.
He's played in all seven games this year, by the way.
How about that?
He's got two sacks.
Okay, well. Okay, so he's still on a pace for five?
Somewhere around there.
Hey, at this point.
Five and a half?
Titans are like, that sounds good. I mean, again, as Vrabel reiterated yesterday, you know, they've hit the quarterback, which is amazing.
In two games.
Three times they've hit the quarterback in two games. That's
pretty incredible.
Wow.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, what's up, Robbie? Joe, how y'all doing, man?
What's going on?
Good. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, y'all buddy Mark from Nashville, Robbie.
That's right.
But, Joe, you know, yesterday was so drama-filled. I'm going to get into that in just a minute, but I think with Levis, man, if they simplify the offense, number one, don't let him throw no more than about 20, 22, 23 passes for the game. They can get Derrick Henry going and establish a good running game and stuff. I think he can have a good game. So I think 15 of 23, 24, maybe 180, 190 yards, maybe limit the turnovers. He may end up having one, but, you know, Malik, I think that's a wash. I would just play Levis the whole game and just see what I got. Now, Joe, you know really why I called this morning. I'm going to make this quick. I gave you the answers yesterday to the game, Joe. Joe, it was right there for you. And you let me down, Joe.
Oh, boy.
You let me down.
Hey, man, they're conspiring against me at this point. They're changing the format of the argument, and I find out at the last second. I mean, it's – it's
I know.
It's whatever.
I know. And Joe, when you uttered the word, what you uttered to Caroline yesterday, I knew you were doomed. She was gonna hold that. She was gonna hold that against you, man. I knew that, Joe. Yeah, I knew that. We're going to have to make up a new show, and I won't be producer of the show. We're going to call it Housewives of Titanville, and we're going to give Steelman a shot at being on the show. He, with the drama that he creates, he could be the main housewife on that show, Housewives of Titanville, with the front office. What do you think about that?
I mean,
been applicable this week.
Vrabel and Steelman.
Yeah, let him go.
Some forum.
You get your hands in there somewhere?
Yeah, some kind of.
Yeah.
Put him in a house, just like the real world house. Put Steelman and Jared fighting over a cereal, you know?
Yeah. The king of drama, you know, and he took a shot at Robbie yesterday. So,
that's all right.
You know, he's drama, man. But, hey, Joe, y'all have a nice day and stuff, man. I'm going to holler at you tomorrow. But, Joe, listen to me next time that I tell you. I know this game that Steelman and Caroline's playing. Just listen to me, Joe. I'm going to get you there, man. Just listen to me.
I'll do better.
We'll see you later, man. All right,
thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. I'll try to do better.
They are conspiring against you.
Yeah, they just changed the format. On another topic, I mean, this is very important from Zach. Please tell me someone in the cowardly local media will become brave enough to ask Vrabel about doing a vest swap with Arthur Smith post-game on Sunday.
I did hear about that. Apparently, Arthur Smith wants that question asked of Vrabel today, so. We'll see how that goes.
Did you see Arthur Smith's pressers this week,
by the way? What the heck's going on around here heading into this game?
Are these the snippiest two coaches in the NFL?
They might be right now.
They're like asking about Bijan Robinson, which is a really weird situation. Yeah, like, well, let's talk about climate change. Huh? You're talking about some politics? Come on! Jeez.
What the heck's going on?
Friends of the show.
They both are friends of the show. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Predators assistant coach Dan Einhoat. We'll get into the Preds as they prepare for the Toronto Maple Leafs coming up this weekend. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds hosting the Toronto Maple Leafs coming up on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. Got a couple of days of practice time. Got the day off today before taking on Toronto on Saturday. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators assistant coach Dan Einhoat, presented by the new Zen Sports Sportsbook with cash rewards and the easiest, simplest betting experience possible. Betting just got better. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Dan, obviously not the result you guys were looking for on Tuesday against Vancouver. Andrew Burnett didn't sound like he was overly happy after the game, especially with the first couple of periods. A long practice yesterday, kind of getting back to some skating. But overall, what did you make of the Vancouver game, and what's the bounce back you're looking for against Toronto?
Well, you know what? I think the Vancouver game was a little bit of a letdown, I think, emotionally for the team. I think, obviously, physically, it worked out that way as well. But we just didn't have the juice, you know, and they do right now. And, you know, if we don't have the kind of talent where we can afford to not show up in a period and get by, you know. And there are very few teams that can, but we're certainly not one of them. And that's kind of what happened the other night, is we just didn't have our juice. You know, for whatever reason, it could just be that time of year. It could have been guys not sleeping well. It could be a million different things. But whatever it was, it equated to us just not having the juice we needed to compete against a team like Vancouver, who's fast and skilled and hungry.
So when you don't have that, how does that manifest itself in performance? Like, what specific things are affected, or were in this game affected on the ice?
You know, it's hard to point and say this is, you know, what it is. It's there's just a lot of it ends up, you lose your 50-50 battles, right? Like, that's kind of a telltale sign of your compete level as a team. And, you know, that's what hockey is all over the ice, or a bunch of, you know, little battles. And if you're not good in those battles, if you're not winning them, you end up chasing the game. And that's exactly what we did, is, you know, they had the puck most of the night and we ended up chasing, because when it was available – and it would go to a 50-50, we wouldn't come out on top as often as they would. So, you know, if you want to simplify it down to one specific thing, that's a real telltale sign of where you're at in your game, are those little 50-50 battles. So, you know, in hockey, the way it works, you win or lose the draw, let's say it's a tie and the puck's just laying there. Well, whoever wins that race to that puck is going to play offense. Whoever doesn't is going to play defense, but, you know, potentially for your entire shift. And that's, you know, that's what we try and impress upon the young guys. It's like every single battle is important for this reason.
Dan, your thoughts on Kiefer Sherwood and the way that he's played at this point. It's been a long, really interesting journey for Sherwood to get to the point of being a full-time NHL player. He's got a Gordie Howe hat trick in the span of like 6.5 minutes the other night, which has to be close to an NHL record. Has another goal against Vancouver. Just overall, what do you make of the way that Sherwood's played so far this season?
You know, it's funny because the assistant coach here – that's new, Derek McKenzie, you know, very kind of similar path to the NHL. It took, I think Mac is like one of, you know, maybe four or five people that have X amount of games in the minors and X amount of games in pro, which means he took the long route. And, you know, but he was at the end, you know, by the time he had made it, Derek was willing to do whatever it took, right? He was a goal scorer in the minors, but if that meant he had to be a grinder up in the show, he was glad to do it. And that's kind of how Woody's come along. Is, you know, he had scored the minors, he had a little taste of the show, and got to the point in his career where he's just like, I will do anything it takes, you know, to stay up here, which, you know, now he's fighting, he's blocking shots, he's, you know, he's finishing his checks, he's an agitator. You know, those facets to his game didn't exist 3 years ago. So, you know, he kind of got to that point where it's like, okay, well, you know, everybody up in the NHL can score. Everybody in the NHL can do X, Y, and Z. How do I differentiate myself as a player? And he's fast. That's the one thing you can't teach, right? Is that speed. So when you have that and the ability to kind of do whatever we ask you, which he does, you know, that usually leads to a good opportunity. And he's taken it and he's run with it. So, you know, we couldn't be prouder of the progression that he's had. And you know, he's a great story for young kids because, you know, at some point, you know, we all want to be the top power play guy. We all want to be, you know, an all-star, but sometimes it doesn't always fit in the puzzle that you're in. So you just have to do whatever is needed. And sometimes that means you got to be a grinder on a team that has good skill. And sometimes it means you got to score when you're on a team that doesn't. So he's a great story and a lot of our identity of what we want to become.
Dan, what does Philip Tomasino need to do to take the next step as a player?
I think Woody's a good example for Tommy. You know, Woody has come up and figured out a way to be impactful even when he's not scored. And that's really the hard part for young NHLers is to figure that out. Like whatever their A-minus game is or B-plus game, it needs to be impactful in the game because, you know, even a 40-goal scorer spends 42 games not scoring. So what are you going to do? How are you going to help the team win when you're not putting the puck in the net? And, you know, so that's work away from the puck. It's physicality. It's blocking shots. It's, you know, kind of all the small things that you see Sissons and Trennan and Smitty do, and, you know, now Woody. And so to me, that's what Tommy has to get his game rounded to kind of be impactful when he's not scoring. He's a smart player. He's got good speed. He's got good skill. He, you know, as Bruno says, well, he can see the play and make it, you know, which is rare and hard to find. So there's a lot there. And so we just have to take that next step of, okay, well, when I'm not providing offense, what else am I bringing to this game? Which, you know, energy, good defensive play, blocking shots, so on and so forth. So, you know, those are the parts of his game we're working on now.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Dan, you know, we've talked a lot this morning about, you know, different paths to get to the NHL. You know, Tommy Novak falls under that category as well. I think he's got something like 37 points in his last 37 games. Was there a point in working with him where you realized that, man, maybe we've got something here, especially offensively with how productive he's been?
Well, he's a different bird in the sense that you don't look at him in training camp and think he's going to be a point of game guy. You don't. He doesn't. He's not. He's kind of unassuming. He's quiet. He just kind of keeps to himself, and his game's a little bit like that until he gets the puck, and then he does things where you shake your head because, you didn't expect it. And he's one of the more, if you just watch his shift to shift, he's one of the more slippery guys in the NHL. And how nobody could tell you, but it's pretty impressive how he how his computer, how fast his computer works under duress, because and he almost never takes a hit, but he puts himself in horrible situations all the time. But he's I think grown accustomed to being slippery enough, get away with it, and it's fun to watch. But you know, we had little glimpses of it last year, and you know, last year we were in that situation where, you know, he had success, but then you start wondering, well, okay, is it because teams took it slightly, we were out of it, you know, he kind of had an elevated role because of injury and blah blah blah. But turns out, you know, coming into camp this year, and at the beginning of this year, you've seen he's the real deal, or can be the real deal if he plays consistently. So we're really excited about what he can become. And like, you know, you don't see it coming with him. He's not, like you said, you don't look at him and go, yeah, that's the guy that's going to score three tonight. But he is the guy that could score three tonight. So we're lucky to have him.
Is Colton Sissons a guy who's going to score like 25-30 this year? I mean, he's off to a great start. But in all seriousness, this new system, Dan, I mean, and Colton, and obviously a guy who's been such a bedrock for this franchise for a long time, it seems like it's they go well together, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy that everybody cheers for, you know, in the organization, because it doesn't go in the net easy for him. You know, he's got to scratch and claw and kick for everything that he's ever gotten. So when it does work for him, you know, everyone's excited. This year is a good example of Colton Sisson's ability to kind of fit every scenario that you want. Like he's your Swiss Army knife and always has been for us. And at least in my experience, where, you know, he's on the power play, he's on the, you know, he has to take draws on the second unit. He's on, obviously, the first over the boards on the kill. He's a great vocal leader in the room. He's also the guy that gets the hard job. He gets the defensive zone assignment, you know, against McDavid and so on. So, you know, when you talk about a person's worth and you know, having the ability to impact the game away from the puck, he couldn't be more important for us. So when it goes in for him as well, you know, it's icing on the cake, and it's great. You know, does he get to 30? God, I hope so. If he gets to 30, I think we're in a great spot, and no one deserves it more than him. So that would be great. But we got a long road ahead of us to see where that ends up. But he's certainly on track for it.
Well, Dan, really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Looking forward to the game coming up on Saturday against Toronto, and we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Preds assistant coach Dan Hinote, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up from 8 to 8:30 for his weekly visit. We'll get into a lot of Tennessee Titans talk with him and all things NFL. Lots to get to with Charles at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. Coming up next, we'll look ahead to Tennessee and Kentucky. Can Tennessee rebound this week after a tough loss to Alabama on the road? We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern, located across from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans' Week 8 matchup against the Falcons and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe, the ball's in action this weekend on the road at Kentucky. We'll see how they rebound after a very rough second half against Alabama last week. You know, this is, you know, obviously you've reached two losses. We talked about this Monday. The race from your vantage point in the SEC East, if you're Tennessee, is pretty much over. I mean, you're not winning the East at this point, barring just an incredible collapse from Georgia.
Which means you'll never win the East again.
Which means you may never do it again. We'll see what happens.
Well, there's no more East.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that. So you're right. Yeah, they will never do it again. Until maybe one day when divisions are reinstated. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it'll be so big. It'll be like the southeast corner.
That's right.
Mid-state, mid-SEC. Yeah.
Tennessee, a 3.5-point favorite on the road at Kentucky. What do you make of this matchup? And What about the mental side of things for the Vols heading into this game? It's another rivalry game on the road after a very disappointing result last time out. Typically, they have been very good following a loss under Josh Heupel. We'll see how this one goes. This is going to be an interesting game for Tennessee on Saturday night against a Kentucky team that I don't know that they're very good, but if Tennessee doesn't play to their capability offensively especially, this could absolutely be a game on Saturday night.
Yeah, I have to admit I've thought so little about this game this week. When I've thought about Tennessee football this week, it's been about what did Connor Stallions do to you? How did Connor Stallions hurt you, Tennessee?
Yeah.
People are going back and watching the South Carolina game from last year. But this is a huge game for Josh Heupel. Huge. Because, like you said, they've done well after a loss. Also, they are to Kentucky just as Florida is to them. So there's kind of just a built-in expectation that they're just going to win this game wherever it is, right? 2 years ago, it was a very good game, by the way. Will Levis looked like a freaking good quarterback, except for the pick six.
There was
in that game. But he looked great.
He did.
He looked like a pro. Their quarterback now is not good. He's pretty bad.
Devin Leary is not very good.
And this is a good reminder. There are always transfer quarterbacks and new quarterbacks every year, and there's always a lot of hype, and everybody looks good in camp, But this guy's not very good. Ray Davis is very good.
He is.
But I expect Tennessee's defense to not let him go off. If he does, then you're going to be in for one here. But I also wonder, offensively, are you building on the first half of last week? The second half, as we've talked about, so many things happen to kind of screw over the offense and Milton that, and obviously you have the strip sack and then the game's over. But before that, the game flipped with special teams, defense, these gaffes that didn't really give the offense a chance. I think there is stuff to build on from last week with Joe Milton. Yeah, by the way, Joe Milton, I think, will start, guys.
Yes.
I don't think there's a question about that. But, yeah, can he take that and move it forward and get some more out of some of these receivers? Squirrel White, as we saw again, Squirrel White's a player. Still don't know that I feel great about anybody else.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, what is the intensity level from Tennessee look like in this game? Like, this to me is one of my favorite sayings in college football, a program game, right? This is one of those type of games of what kind of team do you have? What kind of program do you have? When on the outside, kind of on the surface of things looking in, you've got your second loss of the year, which means, your college football playoff hopes are over with. Barring a miracle, your SEC East hopes are over with. I guess Georgia could lose to Missouri. You could beat Missouri, and then you could have a chance to win against Georgia, and maybe that gives you a shot. I don't anticipate that happening, but stranger things have happened in the world of sports. But for all intents and purposes, you're a long shot at best for the SEC East now. So with 18 to 23, 24-year-old kids, how do you respond to that? Are you internally motivated enough to go out there and play your best football? And I think we're going to find out a lot about, this group of kids, this team that Heupel has, as to whether or not they can do that. Because if they do, I feel like Tennessee should go out there and handle business on Saturday. But this is obviously going to be a game and a team in Kentucky that they want to beat you pretty bad. You're on the road to that environment, which can be a good environment when that place is going. So how do you respond to that if you're Tennessee, given the disappointment of kind of everything circulating around you after that Alabama loss?
Yeah. Nate asked if the Vols are mad enough to blow them out. I could see the Vols handling this game. I think there's also a confidence thing here for Kentucky. It's got to be shaken.
Yeah.
After what Missouri did to them in their stadium. I think the Vols should take some confidence out of the Bama game and some anger because they blew it. But, they put together some really good complimentary football.
They did.
In the first half of that game.
They did.
And, I thought their defense, obviously you just have that terrible drive, and I think they got tired and they got five-starred a little bit you know, and they got out coached. Let's make it clear. Second half of that game. But I still come away from that game seeing a defense that to a decent extent did finally travel out of Neyland Stadium and look like a good defense. So I think that defense should go out there Saturday and really lock down on that offense. It's not good.
How,
other than Ray Davis.
I am interested to see like Kamal Haddon. Like he got banged up last week and he had the collision where he played after that, but I mean he's holding on to his shoulder. Like what does that look like? You know, he has been their best cover corner so far this year. I don't know that Kentucky's passing attack like scares you if you're Tennessee based on the way that Leary has played. I do think they've got some decent playmakers out there. And really the question of the game, like, is Tennessee's pass rush just gonna totally wreck Kentucky in this game? Because I think Tennessee's pass rush has the ability to do that. And if Kentucky's going to sit there and drop back with Leary, especially if Tennessee gets up in this game, then James Pierce Jr., Tyler Barron, I think they're going to have some opportunities to get after the quarterback in this one.
You would think so. I mean, James Pierce Jr. to me right now is chasing All-America status.
He's been very good.
Yeah. So,
by the way, we didn't even talk about this just based on what happened in the second half. That play he made against Milroe in the first half was just – he just bull rushes the left tackle, strip sack, and all of a sudden Tennessee's got the football. He's a great play.
Yes.
By Pierce. He's very good.
Big-time play. Big-time play. Yeah, I mean, I think there's some good things. I think the defense, I feel confident in the defense having a good day against Kentucky. Like you said, they can make some plays. And I mean, the Ray Davis thing is interesting.
It is.
He's been really good, and he – has joined a team, you know, that runs the ball. That's what they do. He has fit in perfectly. It's a great portal ad. I'm wondering what Kentucky would be had Stoops not added him in the portal. But this Tennessee defense, you know, you mentioned those guys, but guys like Norman Lott and Thomas and Beasley inside, like, I think they're built to stop him. And then I think Kentucky has problems. Tennessee's offense.
How do the running backs respond?
I feel like unless you've got the guys like Alabama has, I expect Tennessee to run for close to 200 yards in this game. Even if Joe Milton is not having a good night, that's what I think. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe Kentucky will find a way to limit that, but the scheme and the backs make it so hard on people.
It is. And can you, Squirrel White, coming off a great game against Alabama, I don't really have any concerns about him heading into this game. Keaton continues to prove that he'll go up and snag one for you, and he'll also probably drop one that hits him right in the hands. Is there a third receiver that at some point can step up in the absence of Brew McCoy? They've tried different ones. I mean, Caleb Webb's been out there. They put Thornton out there for a play the other day, and he dropped one that hit him right in the hands.
He was open.
Nimrod's been out there. Like, they've tried different guys. Can one of those guys step up and make a couple plays, which they just really haven't done to this point? I mean, Nimrod made a couple in the A&M game, but all in all, they've not made enough of what they've been asking them to do.
Yeah, they need one of them to step forward. Nimrod's probably the best bet.
Yeah, he is.
Which is great for everybody.
I can't wait till he's All-American. It's going to be great. All-American Chaz Nimrod, ladies and gentlemen. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. We will do that next. Charles Robinson coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On the both quarterbacks playing thing.
I'm going to focus on the Falcons. Like, we're good.
For this game.
And we're going to talk about the Falcons, Joe. So. Why are you holding your hands like that?
I'm trying to get a question in here.
Well, then ask the question. No, I'm just saying, like, you look ridiculous. Just ask the question, Joe.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Think like a dude. Think like an athlete. Think like a grown man, and then you'll think how I'm thinking.
What a week for Vrabel, baby. It's been good so far. It's time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. You can check it out every morning at 7:45.
I'm trying to – so, Nick, is there any significance to Kenny Loggins' danger zone? I mean, Vrabel is like a big football-playing Kenny Loggins. Like with a beard, you know, when he has a beard going. Yeah.
I mean, it's the danger zone, man. You're playing with fire talking about Vrabel.
Oh,
I think.
Okay.
Also, I didn't want to play all the meme music, so this is something different.
I see what you're doing. Okay. Yeah, so we're going to talk about Mike Vrabel. Vrabel, you dirty, rotten son of... No, I'm just kidding. So I got to talk about this because the reaction to it has been interesting, I guess, in some ways. I get it. But first of all, I just want everybody to know, like, we're cool, and I'm secure as one of the top three writers in the history of mankind, one of the sexiest voices in America, and I'm confident in saying one of the top 25 middle-aged husband rappers in the Western Hemisphere.
Yep.
I'm fine, okay? Everything's fine. But really, in all seriousness, I'm top 10 on husband rappers. But in all seriousness, this is the thing that happened. As someone my age, it's really interesting because, and Kaharsky loves this crap. I mean, I don't know how Kaharsky even lived. You know, he's older than me, way older. But most of my career of covering press conferences was just like you went to the press conference to get information and stuff, and you recorded it and you wrote down stuff. And
yeah.
And whatever happened at the press conference was not a show, right? Now it is. Like everybody listens live and watches live. And so this is why you get, yeah, wait, Coach Vrabel. But what if you had two whistles at once? Then what would you do? You know, like, you know, these press conferences just become these. It's very performative at times, but it just it, like the instant reaction. And I know I'm acting like this is new in 2023. Like this was starting to become the case. I don't know. I mean, I guess a few years ago, but not that long ago, you know?
Coach, did you feel like it was two-hand touch versus Mortal Kombat out there?
God,
probably not.
That should have been the rant today. But here's the thing that I do want to address with this, okay? Well, first of all, on the media side, like if you don't ever piss off people you cover, then like, you know, I personally would feel dirty. Like if I never do that, I'd slap myself in the face with one of these hands, these magic jazz hands, okay? But this is one thing that I definitely have learned. I guess this is kind of like an old man. I've been doing this for a long time, rant. You can be unhinged, convinced everyone's out to get you, have it rabbit ears. You can come off as a total jerk, and you can win like crazy. And you can be calm, cool, friendly, willing to elaborate, talk about everything. You can be the greatest, and you can lose and get sent packing. I really – like there's no correlation because what I've seen a lot is like, you know, Vrabel's losing it. He's losing his grip. And people are like, I mean, people are mad. I mean, he's 2-4. They're losing. So, right? So this is like some kind of indication of things crumbling. This is not really different. I mean, Vrabel. No. Yeah, now, when he loses, is he more irritable? Sure.
Yeah.
He's a human being.
Right.
But, you know, look, this really is not indicative of anything in terms of performance, okay? Like, it really isn't. I mean, it's not an indicator of whether someone – and I think people should know that about Vrabel. Vrabel's early press conferences here were some of the weirdest ones.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't like this stuff, okay? And that's just how it's always going to be. And you know,
friend of the show, though, does like our radio program.
That's true. He loved coming on the show. He had a blast. So basically, what matters is that he does his job,
right?
You know, and if he does, you know, someday he gets the Titans the Super Bowl, right here. See this? I'll light up a Paul Mall unfiltered for him and hand it to him. Here you go, Mikey. Yeah, it was fun. It's going to be – I mean, I really want to thank him because now there's a bunch of Ricky Bobby memes. Yeah. I mean, I got friends in Michigan today who were sending me the picture of me that Nick Frazier put together with me, like the Ricky Bobby.
Do we think Charles has seen all this? Do we need to educate him next segment about all this?
Be great. Know. That's a good question. Yeah, he's coming up right next. I don't know. I got some questions for Charles about the Titans.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
for sure. But anyway, again, it just basically the this isn't a very good rant because it's like it's not a big deal.
Well, I was thinking about this yesterday because I'm always, even with the Jared stuff on Tuesday, right? So let's say the Titans are 4-2, 5-1. With your situation yesterday, a lot of the reaction from the Titans fan base, I think, would be, yeah, Vrabel, show that idiot reporter. What was he doing with his hands? What a moron.
Oh, right, yeah.
And instead, most of the reaction, not all, but most of the reaction that I saw from it yesterday was, wow, Vrabel looks like the pressure's getting to him a little bit, coming a little unhinged up there. What's he going after the media for?
Yeah.
And it's because they're 2-4.
Yes.
That's what it is.
No, Kaharsky had a tweet and, you know, whatever, like, Vrabel gives reporter unnecessary bleep or something like that. And so he had, like, ridiculous amounts of reaction to the video. He sent out the video.
Yeah.
This is the video I'm getting back now from friends in Michigan, you know.
Is this you, Joe?
So.
Yep.
So, yes, it is. Yeah. So it really is, like, if things are going well, then it's, yeah. Now, there is still a little bit of, even with it going poorly with Jared, a little bit of, cooked him.
There
you
is know? That.
But, yeah, if it's the other way around. Yep, here we go. As we see, we got some people sending out the Ricky Bobby. I mean, D-Mace called me Joe Bobby yesterday on the show. So, thanks a lot, Vrabes.
Our buddy Zach says, Joe, you got to wear gloves to the next presser. You should. You should put, like, some clown hands on or some gloves. Let's lean into this. Have a little fun with it.
What if they lose Sunday? Because Vrabel, I guess Vrabel has a quick little thing Friday, but – you know, that's not like a presser. It's like people standing around him from it,
yeah.
Which I probably won't go to. No offense, Vrabel. Appreciate you.
I mean, it's been pretty good this week.
Bless your heart. But like, what if they lose Sunday and I had clown hands and I asked a question?
Just, hey, Mike! Mike, look at me!
I'm sure that would go over well.
Sure, he would love it.
That'd go over great. By the way,
kind of ugly, though.
DJ Burnside had a great illustration, too.
Yes.
Of me in a clown suit asking a question. So again, thanks, Vrabes.
I would love to know what he thought you were doing with your hands. Like,
well, for him
to actually comment on what are you doing with your hands?
I said this at 6 a.m. For people who don't know, he cut me off. I mean, he didn't want the question because I'm asking like, what is the actual plan? Because I think he doesn't want to talk about it because he's lying to us and they're not actually going to do a junior high quarterback plan.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, so it doesn't want to. So I was just trying to like, are you really going to do? But he kept cutting me off, and so I just like put my hands up like this. I'm like, stop cutting me off. And then what happened? You know, and he said what he said. It was kind of funny.
I mean, my dad said you get the hamburger helper hands in there. Just come bring that in the press conference. The gloves. Hey, Mike, how are we doing up there?
There's a lot of things we can do with this.
I'm still down for the we had a texter yesterday suggest the, you know, the Stilly and Mikey program. I would love to see that. Stilly and Mikey.
Someday, you know, like if Vrabel gets fired, Stilly, Mikey, and Pauly.
What a trio.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. It would be amazing.
He would just grab them both together and like brr, like knock their heads together and it'd be amazing.
So what you're saying, like you don't think after yesterday's exchange, like Vrabel doesn't hate you and you don't hate Vrabel.
No, we're good.
I think you're good.
Yeah, we're cool.
Okay. But sometimes people get worried about that sort of stuff after some of these clashes at the press conference.
Again, like this is where like if I could go back in time for our co-producer Tom Izzo, some of the stuff he said to me that was not on TV and people but it was just like, "Oh my God." Stuff we said to each other.
Yep.
Yeah. Saban was, I was like a student more so. Yeah, there were a couple moments where he shamed everybody. But Izzo, covering him closely for a lot. I mean, this is nothing. Love you, Izzo.
My favorite part of the
whole is. Get here on time tomorrow because Connor Stallions is starting to take over some of your duties.
That's right.
And you need to, I understand it's hoop season now, but let's get your butt in here on time.
My favorite part of the whole exchange was, you going to let me ask a question?
That's why I put my hands up.
You going to let me do this? Rabel? You going to let me ask this?
Oh, God.
It's beautiful. What happens Friday?
It's pretty funny.
It's been, this is the most fun of a Mike Vrabel press conference week that I can remember.
I know.
You got another one on Friday coming for us?
That's the thing. It's like we actually have fun Vrabel pressers. Let's embrace this and cherish it. JC in Goodlettsville said, ask questions in sign language. I should learn sign language.
What a beautiful moment yesterday.
Why did you not go for it on fourth down? That was, yeah. Okay.
Coming up next, it's time to end the rant. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get into Mike Vrabel's comments this week, get into what we talked about earlier with Ian Rappaport's report that Will Levis is starting for the Titans, and a whole lot more. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.